Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you. And if I'd known I was going to be being broadcast live all around the country, I would have put on some powder, but it's new. It's great to be here, and I know you've had a very good day already, and that this is the last, sometimes called the graveyard session, so it's nice to see so many people still here. And I'm pleased just to be able to say a few words this afternoon on the theme of sport and particularly young people. As you know, and as has just been mentioned, I'm the Labour MP for Vauxhall, and when the Mayor was elected in 1998, he asked me would I take on the role of his Commissioner for Sport, particularly for grassroots sport and legacy. And it was a bit of probably a few eyebrows raised that a Labour MP was going to be doing that for a Conservative mayor. But in my view, sport absolutely transcends party politics and should transcend party politics. And if we actually always kept to that, I think we would achieve a lot more. And I've certainly found it very, very useful in London, particularly because London, although it's the capital city, has not actually been coordinated in the way that other metropolitan cities have been. And we didn't even have a sports unit at City Hall. We now have. We've got a small sports unit. And obviously there was some dedicated money put in to ensure that we had something to go to the table with. And I think the work that we've done has shown that the partnership and the working together of all the 33 London boroughs has improved and is very, very necessary. Now, I hope that what we've done has shown that it's all about sport and about helping to ensure that at the very least out of the Olympics and the Paralympics, there is a legacy for Londoners, because obviously Londoners, the Olympics and the Paralympics are nearest to them. It is the host city. I know it's a games for the whole of the country, but the reality is that we're paying just that little bit more in London, and we're going to have all the extra people, or the people coming for the Olympics. We're going to have the transport disruption. And I think at the end of it, people living in all parts of London want to feel that it hasn't just been a 6-7 week show, that there's been something concrete at the end, or preferably not concrete, at the end in their area. So I want to talk just a bit about what we've been doing in London as we go along, but turn first of all to the theme of this session, which is the power of sport, I think, to transform people's lives. And I don't think there'd be anybody in this room, and there is a huge amount of expertise here already, who has any doubt about the power of sport to transform not just young people, but anyone's lives. I am preaching to the converted. But I think while everyone is signed up to the principle, there's plenty of doubt about the application. Are we using the power of sport effectively as possible? Are we creating enough opportunities for young people, and are they the right kind of opportunities? Is there an understanding from all the other sectors in local government and in government about the role that sport can play? And I think that's that last point that's actually most crucial for us at this time. With local elections just 100 days away at City Hall, of course, everyone now is getting into that furiously scribbling manifestos and working out what they're going to be fighting on, ensuring that their budgets aren't slashed too much. And I asked our little sports team to prepare a paper to make the case for sport in London. And in that paper, and they did this very, very well, and by far the most striking thing to emerge was that just how our small but very effective sports programme has helped to deliver on so many other of the major policies and programmes that are coming out of City Hall. For example, in our support of programmes like Kicks and HITS, and our investment in youth clubs is really contributing to the Mayor's work to reduce youth crime. And so equally, some of our sport-based training and mentoring initiatives are helping to divert young people away from potentially damaging behaviour and back towards education, employment and mainstream society. Now, health is another area in which sport has such a positive role to play. And for years, I think we've all struggled to try and get the health sector to become less resistant to the feeling that they are part of this really important overview. But I do think now we are beginning to see some progress. And our focus at City Hall has been very much on what we call the inactives, those people who currently do no sport or physical activity at all. Because it's always been very clear that people talk about doing more sport or people doing more sport. And we got ourselves into the Sport England thing of, was it more people playing sport who'd never played sport before, or more people playing sport, playing more sport? And then do you compete with another sport to get people into your sport to play, so your tick box goes up and the others go down? What we were very clear was anything we were funding was actually going to be having to have a percentage of inactive people who do nothing at all. And, of course, one of the critical ways of tackling this inactivity is to look at school leavers, because that, as we know, is where the drop-off in participation occurs. It used to be called, many years ago, the Wolfenden Gap. And for the first time now, I'm beginning to hear examples of hospitals engaging directly with community sports organisations. That's certainly happening in my area. And the positive impact of participation in sport, and about the negative impact that dropping out of sport can have on the health of a young person. So really what I'm saying is that we all can say that we believe that sport has an impact, and we all appreciate the ability of sport to help address these other social issues. But the challenge that really faces all of us is to spread this message and to make sure that we put the case as strongly and as coherently as possible. Because right now, as I'm sure has been said, is the time. The door is slightly ajar. Of course, some of it is down to having the Olympics and the Paralympics this year. It also, of course, is because budget cuts mean that people are looking for more innovative solutions. But whatever the reason, this is our opportunity. And I think that once the Olympics and the Paralympics is over, and if we haven't laid the groundwork, and if we haven't done that and got our change in attitude and our change in culture in the way we work in local authorities, then the opportunity will be lost. Because I'm afraid that once the Olympics and the Paralympics are over, my real fear is that people will then say in other sectors and in other areas who don't really care that much about sport, well, you've had everything. You've had your day. You've had your Olympics. You've had your Paralympics. Now, come on, it's time for the arts to get more. It's time for all these other things. So we really have to be pushing at this stage, and we must not ever give up in the sense of speaking out. Now, most of the people who are here from local authorities today, it is very challenging. We know that budgets being cut, and of course sport not being statutory, will of course suffer probably disproportionately, unless you have a very strong, as I'm sure many of you are, directors of leisure and who care passionately about it. And it is a shame if this happens, because there are so many fantastic schemes and programmes out there, programmes that with just a little bit of sport could make a huge difference. I'm thinking of just things that we're very willing to help, the Panathlon Challenge, which provides the programme of coaching and proper competitive sport to seriously disabled young people in special schools. And through our Mayor's Sports Legacy programme, we've helped them. And, you know, going to watch a Panathlon event is one of the most rewarding and inspiring things that you can do. And it really does bring home just how much sport can bring to the lives of young people who, without that opportunity, would not have had any chance of being involved in any kind of physical activity. I also believe that it's not all about money. And I've said this for years, and people sort of look at you horrified, because usually the first thing is, we can't do that because we need money. Of course, money is important, but we can make a big difference with very little money. And here I'm thinking of all the work that's already going on. In London, for example, we have so many amateur boxing clubs, something like the Fitzroy Lodge in my own constituency. And now these clubs usually are embedded in the community, the very heart of their communities, and they've been helping out what are seen as disadvantaged young people for many, many years, for generations indeed. They very rarely publicise their work. They very rarely ask for huge amounts of money. They just need a relatively tiny amount, usually, to take off that burden of just having to spend all their time trying to keep the door actually open. Perhaps they need some small new equipment or some assistance with a new lease. And it's usually just a tiny amount, in a drop in the ocean for a local authority or a leisure provider, but it has the potential to make a huge difference. And I think that's what we always have to be doing, looking for how our little bit of money can just add that value and make the difference between a project going from just ticking over to actually being able to increase its numbers and increase its penetration in the community. So I think our job as people who believe in sport is to make clear to local authorities, to councillors, to those who make the decisions, that cutting sport is a false economy. The people who are actually going to make that decision are missing a trick. And there is some evidence to support this claim because we're living in an evidence-based society. And some of the work that's been done in the social return on investment modelling and other similar methods of evaluation are showing that well-run, carefully thought-out sports programmes could help reduce local authority spend in all the key areas I mentioned earlier and many others beside. So in other words, investing in one area of sport will actually save in other areas. And we see it, all of us. I see it in my own constituency every day. In Vauxhall, we're very lucky to have one of the last community action zones based on the site of what was the old Lillian Bayliss School. Now, this one site, which we've now just got the council after a long battle to give up its ownership and 125-year lease into a trust, the Black Prince Community Trust. But this site, under the leadership of one person, actually Brian Dickens, some of you may know, has made a genuine difference to the local community and to the lives of thousands of children and young people. He is an amazing motivator, and it's a genuine community sports hub. But if you'd gone along to it 8 years ago, it was just a building with facilities. And what those buildings with facilities is, yes, they need some money, but they need the really dedicated person and people who are going to not give up, who are going to hammer on doors, who are not going to allow the council to use the tricks of bureaucracy to stop them doing things. And it's now a host to a whole range of clubs, community groups. And over the years, what we've managed to do is get the private sector really engaged in that, because when they see something that's working and that they think they can come in and add their value, they are usually, I have found, particularly keen to do so. We've now got the basketball courts, football pitches, tennis courts, the Michael Jordan basketball gym, which he himself opened, and a whole range of other rooms and facilities. A absolutely fantastic, transforming, changing lives area, but not done by a top-down, we are going to do this to you because this is your, we think we could do this from a local authority or from even the government, by people themselves who saw that this could happen and working through and using the levers of power in terms of council leaders and MPs and so on to help, but actually being the ones who made it happen. And it belongs to the community. Absolutely crucial. Vandalism goes down. Children know that it's theirs. Young people know that if it's vandalised, they're going to have to get, somebody inside their community is going to have to pay to get it fixed. So I've always said that if every borough in London, and some of you will have these anyway, but if every borough had its own Lillian Bayliss or its own Black Prince Trust, and there are buildings like that all around the country, sort of sitting there, nobody quite sure how to make them work and what to do with them. And as I said earlier, we're now getting the evidence to show that it proves. We've had the monitoring and full evaluation done, and it shows that for every pound invested in that site, we are creating a social capital of between £6 and £7. Now, that should be enough to make any leader of any council or any chief executive to actually take notice. And although we've had our fair share of run-ins with Lambeth Council over the years, I think they are beginning to appreciate the real incredible impact that the work's done. I just want to say something very quickly, coming from London as a London MP, about the riots that hit London and, of course, other parts of the country last year. But I think it was only just to say, really, that the children, the young people, all those involved in the kind of places that, like Lillian Bayliss, were not out rioting and looting. And they're certainly the type of young people who would fit the stereotypes of what people would say were the stereotypical image of a rioter, although I'm not sure that quite actually is as stereotypical as some people have said. But they did not get involved. And really, from what I can tell, the only difference, the really old manifest difference between them and the rioters was the fact that they were part of something positive. They're part of a sporting community, and this alone was enough to stop them, enough for them to recognise that what was wrong with taking to the streets, and enough for them to see the kind of madness in destroying their own communities, and enough to understand that even in a part of London that is in one of the most deprived areas, they could lead worthwhile lives, and those lives and the work they were doing could lead on to jobs, because that's very much part of what we're trying to do in that area. And I think this, for me, was the clearest possible example of what we all know, that sport really does have an extraordinary ability to transform the lives of our children and our young people. So I'm really, my message is, as I'm sure many others, is that we have to continue to make the case, to really push it, to make the most of this Olympic window and Paralympic window by giving young people the chance to get involved, to stay involved, and to enjoy the huge benefits that sport will bring to their lives. No other Olympic city has ever managed to achieve a sustainable increase in sporting participation. I went to Sydney. I was very lucky to be sports minister during the Sydney Olympics. Fantastic Olympics. But even in Australia, of course, you could argue they all do sport anyway, Grant, couldn't they? He's Australian. New Zealander. Oh, my goodness. Well, I have just... I must say, I've known Grant for a very, very long time, and I've still got it in my head that you're from Australia, Grant, but clearly...
No, we won the World Cup.
Well, you won the World Cup, yes, OK. But having said that, Sydney was fantastic. But even there, after it was all over, there were some questions about what the legacy it had left. And I can't say that we will definitely ensure that there will be a sustainable increase in participation in throughout the country and particularly in London. But I think that if we miss that opportunity and we miss putting together all the little bits and pieces now that will make that happen, we will live to regret it. And so I'm very confident that the work that we're doing in London will make that possible. But I'm also very sure that all of you from all over the United Kingdom who are doing your bit will be making it happen. And I hope that we can come back perhaps in a year's time when the Olympics and the Paralympics and all, everything's been taken down and everybody's gone away, and actually see that it has really been a changing, life-changing time for the way we look at sport in this country. Thank you.
Kate does have to go, but she's agreed to take a couple of questions. So can we have...
Not about geography, obviously.
No.
Sorry,
not about Southern Hemisphere geography. Yes, there's a Mr. Morgan.
Graham Morgan again from Evolve. Kate.
Evolve.
Oh, yeah.
Evolve. We're a social enterprise,
yes,
combating inactivity and obesity. Just an interesting observation and piece of information you can give us. Following Diane Abbott's comments about inactivity and the lack of fitness amongst children in London, are you working together in synergy with the sport and attacking the obesity together?
Yeah, I mean, that leads on really from the mention I made about health. Yes, we are. We're working very, very closely now. The mayor has a health visor. The mayor has now statutory responsibility for public health aspects. So we've linked into that. But we're also getting our... In London, of course, we do things differently. So they're called proactives instead of county-community partnerships. And the proactives, we're trying to get proactives, are working much more closely with the local, again, changing names, but what were primary care trusts. All of that is very, very important. And in for example, in Lillian Bayliss, we've got, trying to extend the provision for doctors' referrals to the gymnasium for people who they think would benefit from that. Huge amount of money goes into health. Absolutely. I mean, I've got the figures to hand, but so much more than goes into any other area practically of our public life. And all we need is just that percentage to be siphoned off, to be used for the kind of things that we're all doing and you're all doing. And it would actually transform the National Health Service and save the budget long term, as you probably well aware.
One more, please. Anybody else? Can I ask one myself,
yeah.
Kate? I mean, one of the things that you must have heard when you've talked is, and it hasn't come up today, possibly because people are so polite, but it's as the Olympics and Paralympics are in London, you know, it's the legacy thing in the other corners of the UK, and whether you feel that we're actually doing enough to actually make the legacy work in the rest of the UK.
Oh, try not to be too sort of political, in the sense that I have to say that years ago, when all the hype was on, and there was a huge hype when we won the Olympics, before we won it in order to win it, and I always said then that there was actually too much hype about what the Olympics and Paralympics were going to deliver for the rest of the country. Yes, there was a feel-good feeling, hopefully, and we'd win lots of medals, and if medalists come from Scotland or Northern Ireland or Wales, that north of England, that helps those areas. But, you know, the reality is, and LOCOG have huge amounts of money, and I still have my worries about how they're spending it and how little, well, and how no, virtually no sort of public involvement in how it's spent. I think there is a concern that some areas of the country will feel a little bit let down. I think where areas have managed to get teams coming from other countries to train there, that is, if used properly, it's got to be used properly. There's no point bringing a team and then them just sort of hiding themselves away and nobody ever seeing them. They've got to be make it that they're open to the public and open to children in schools, because that will definitely be I know, for example, looking at the Northern Ireland contingent at the front, I think we've got the Chinese gymnasts coming and the Russian boxers. Australian boxers, oh dear, not New Zealand, the Australian boxers. And, you know, that is going to make, if that's done properly in a small place like Northern Ireland, that can be amazingly exciting for children and for everybody. But, you know, there will be parts of the country that will not be able to have those. There is a lot of attempts being made by LOCOG and particularly by SEBCO to really try and get everyone to have something in their area that is, you know, even if it's just an Olympic brand of some kind. But I think we have to be realistic. You know, London, it is London. And while it may have helped us get it by promising all sorts of things, they don't necessarily get carried through in the way that perhaps they should have. But I still think for most people in the country, it will be a terrific opportunity to lead on from the Olympics into getting children motivated. The only terrible thing is if someone's motivated and they come along and they really want to do something and there's no support mechanism there to tell them where to go and how to do it.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. Can we give our thanks to Kate Hoey?
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.